All right. Greetings today. I'm Larry Tyler. I'm doing this session on career development for changing jobs, bringing greetings from Atlanta, land of the free and the home of the Braves. Today, we're going to talk about negotiating job offers and then accepting job offers. And then what do you do next? Okay. All right. Let's start first of all with you've gone through this whole series with me. We started off just getting prepared. We had the resume, we had the cover letter, we had business cards, we had references that we all put together. And then we started with Then we started with networking. And then you got the interview. And now they are turning around and they're saying, we're ready to make you an offer. So this is what we're going to do. Sometimes they'll talk to you about, they'll make the offer in verbally and then follow up with a letter, or they may follow up with a contract, depending on what level you are. So in this period of time, before they're actually putting something commitment together, there may be some opportunities for negotiation. So the first place that you tend to negotiate is at the salary level. So generally, people don't want to change jobs unless there's a 15% increase in salary, at least that. And why is that? Because, first of all, changing jobs involves risk. There's got to be a risk premium in here somewhere, because you really don't know what the job is like until you sit in the chair. And then you get all these little surprises. Some of them may be big surprises that come about. So you should try to get at least a 15% increase and probably more depending upon the risk in the position. For example, if it's a risky position like a staff job that could be easily cut, or the organization's going through turmoil, and there's been a lot of turnover, you just don't know. So that's something that you need to be thinking about. You know, what is this risk that I'm going to assume in this position? You know, oftentimes you make a move, and then you find out the cost of housing was a lot more than you thought. The taxes are eating you up. The state has put in another income tax. Just all kinds of things. So there's a good reason to get the risk there. Most organizations have salary ranges, so they may have some ability to move the salary up and down, or if they're making you an offer and you're at the top of the range, it may be very difficult for them to do it. Don't forget now that, you need to look at the entire package, not just what the salary is. In most cases now, there's some type of bonus incentive, very common, except maybe in the state-run or city-run organizations. And a bonus is a good thing. You know, it jumps up your salary and your compensation. So you need to, if you're looking at these bonuses, you need to make sure that you've looked at whether they've paid out the bonuses in the last few years and how much has been paid out. You should ask them that question. So they give you, sometimes there are these huge bonus opportunities that never get paid out because the organization is struggling to meet the metrics. So this is one of the things you need to ask about. If you don't have a bonus now, then a bonus is just a cherry on top of the ice cream, and that'd be a wonderful thing. Sometimes you can negotiate. If you can't negotiate salary, it's possible that you might be able to negotiate job description. And hear me out on this. One of the reasons that people change jobs is that they want to get more experience in a certain area. So I recently worked with a client that was trying to go from being a pharmacist to having general administration. It was in a 400-bed hospital. We talked about that. And one of my suggestions was that he go to a smaller facility as a pharmacist, but also as a part of that, negotiating other departments that would be under his purview, in that it would advance his career. He could make more money doing that, and it would take him toward the direction he wants to go. Often call these taking half steps. In other words, sometimes it makes sense to hold on to what you got, but add something else to it. And I think that makes sense in the long run, especially if you're trying to move into general administration or be a COO or CEO or something like that. And those are things that you can do that will help your career in the long run. So you might negotiate that. Sometimes you can negotiate a bonus to sign. In other words, if you're having a hard time with the salary negotiations and they've done everything that they can to do that, you're at the top of their range. Sometimes a bonus to sign will just put you over the top and make you happy. It'll make up for that situation where the bonus, whether you're not getting the salary, and then maybe the bonuses are not as frequent as they could be. So think about having that bonus to sign, and you can ask about it.
Hello, Ms. Tyler.
Who is this? Anyhow, Sam, you're gonna have to edit that out. I'm sorry. Anyhow, negotiating on the job description and the signing bonus are things that you need to consider and put at least ask about it. Job descriptions, it depends. It sometimes it has to take a committee to get a job description changed. Other times, it's the hiring manager said, "Sure, let me work that out," and you calls HR and talk to the people that are necessary to make a decision. Next thing you know, you've got the decision made. Okay. So, in changing jobs, oftentimes we are focused on what's good for us. And you've got to be careful because you also got to remember what's good for the organization. And I'm going to give you an example of this. So I had a candidate one time who had negotiated a CEO position and it was all ready to go. They were moving. Okay. And so there was a the they'd gotten the moving van packed, but the new house, he had a fireplace in his old house. The new house had a fireplace. He decided that he wanted to move his firewood and was insistent upon it. So they go and get another truck in order to load this firewood. And it was a big truck, and the firewood didn't take up as much. It was a nice load of firewood, but it didn't even take up near half of that additional truck. The word about that got back to the organization and tainted the candidate with this unreasonable request. The candidate could have bought firewood for less than it would have cost them for this truck to be hauling it 1,000 miles. It's just a crazy thing. So make sure that you're doing a good thing for the organization and not just looking out for yourself when you do this. Most job offers are going to be, especially at the mid or lower level, are going to be letters of agreement. But they'll have some other rules over there that you need to be aware of. Then if you get into the CEO, COO level, you'll end up with a contract. Now, ACHE has a sample contract, and yours truly helped put that together. I think we're now in our fourth edition. I had input into the last three. And so there are paragraphs there to look out for when you're negotiating a contract, or if you've got a letter of agreement, and it refers to some kind of corporate regulations, things like that. You need to look into it. Just know what you're getting into. Here's what you've got to look for. First of all, covenants not compete. And in the state of Georgia, a lawyer told me one time, of all the 50 states, we were the 49th that you wanted to litigate a covenant not to compete, because the right to work is a part of the state constitution in Georgia. And there's one Supreme Court ruling that said that six Philadelphia lawyers couldn't put together a covenant not to compete that would be upheld in Georgia. That was in the court case. So over the years, that's been modified, and typically it's modified by distance as the crow flies. It's modified by time, and it's modified by the level of the job. So those are the three common things that you find in covenants not to compete. If you have a covenant not to compete, it says you can't work for anybody in the same business anywhere in the United States, that's an issue. I'm not even sure that, you know, well, first of all, they may not, it probably get thrown out of the court. That said, the litigation cost on your part would be a lot. So you want to make sure that you know what you're going getting into and that you can live with the consequences of it. So covenants not to compete are very common. Typically, it's 2 years. Typically, it's within a certain amount of money. And in fact, if you're in a hospital, the doctors that are part of the medical practice that's owned by the hospital will have covenants not to compete. So it's a very common thing to see. Okay, the other thing that you'll find is protection of books and records. It's an interesting concept because they don't want you turning the future planning that you're doing for your organization into an opportunity for you or somebody else. And I've seen those litigated too, especially if somebody went into, they got out of the covenant not to compete, but they ended up in a business or with another company that wanted to do the same thing that they've been doing in their hospital. So you've got to be careful about that. Make sure you look it up and make sure that you are following that. Otherwise, you got litigation. When litigation happens, then you may lose your severance. You'll certainly lose respectability within your own organization and the references that go with that. So you've got to be very careful. The other thing that you'll find is there to be a protection of employees. And usually it's about a year that you can't recruit from the organization. So make sure you've got that. And even if people want to join you immediately because you're such a good person, then you've got to be careful that you don't step on that, and that will cause litigation also. And the last thing that you need to worry about as far as these negotiations is the clawback clause, CLAWBACK. A clawback clause is a common thing in the for-profit sector. It came out of the financial crisis. And what happened was a bunch of corporations had issued erroneous financial statements and paid out bonuses based on erroneous financial statements. And then they didn't have a clawback clause. So they got to keep the money that was, if not in error, it was fraudulently obtained. So what happened was the Congress passed the clawback clauses. And I think it's like 3 years. It depends on the organization. If they're publicly traded, they've got to have a clawback clause. Well, anything that happens on Wall Street or in the SEC, the chances are pretty high it's going to flop over into the nonprofit sector. So what will happen is you may see that in your contract, or you may see that in the letter agreement, that they have the right to claw back the bonuses or compensation based upon erroneous financial statements. So I always tell my candidates, don't go out and buy a new house, vacation home after you get your first or second bonus. Just hold on to it till the time for a clawback is expired. Because you never know about how those things are going to work out, and you know they can come after you and get that money back. Okay, so those are the four main clauses to look for in a letter of agreement or in a contract. Sometimes you can negotiate parts of that contract, and I'll give you an example of that. We had one candidate who had gotten a contract and or gotten the initial draft, and the initial draft only held for 90 days of severance in case of the person leaving the organization, getting fired, or in this case, reorganized out of a job. And the organization that he was going to work for had had lots of turmoil and people leaving. So we said, look, you know, this is not enough. You've got to get more. You've got to get at least 6 months, probably a year. And we would shoot for a year. That'd be 12 months on this. And so what happened was he went back, son of a gun, he negotiated 18 months of severance. I would thought, wow, man, you've done well. And of course, he had a potential boss that was really understood what he was saying about the turnover and things like that. Sure enough, 90 days into it, they reorganized him out. And but he had 90 days. So they put it, what they did is they put him, he had the 18 months. So they put him on a traveling squad. He did a lot of interim work. So these are the things that can happen to you. And you need to make sure that, you know, if the company declares bankruptcy, you know, good luck in that. You may be standing behind other creditors in order to try to get your money. So, all right, you negotiated this thing and got it down to where it looks reasonable. And in fact, you may have done a good job, such a good job in negotiation that it's really exciting. And so, what you want to do now is to sit down and make a decision. And there's so many things that go into making a decision. I had this early in my career, and I had two competing offers at the same time. That doesn't happen much anymore. So I'm going to give you Larry Tyler's thoughts and rules about this, trying to make a decision so that it's helpful to you. Because what happens is you generally don't get two offers at the same time and you can't compare them. I'm trying to give you a standard so that you can compare your offer with what I think is important. So this is, and you know, you use it or not, that's up to you, but I've used it with hundreds of candidates, and it just works out well to try to use this way of thinking about a job offer. The first thing that you think about is money. The great thing about money is it's quantifiable. You know what the salary is going to be. You can sit down and figure out the benefits part of it and put numbers to that. You can put down an average from the bonuses, and voila, you've got a number. And it's going to be pretty close within a range of what you'll end up having after your first year. So that's good. I told you about trying to get 15% more on the salary, but also, you know, you may get a, if you don't have a bonus program now, getting a bonus program is a good deal, even if it doesn't pay out as much as, you know, you'd like to have. Generally, they pay out something. So that's good. That's the easy part, money. Easy. Second thing you have to make a decision about is opportunity. And opportunity is something that you personally have to define. What is the opportunity? Is it the opportunity to work in a bigger organization at the same job? Opportunity to work in a smaller organization with a slightly different job? Is it an opportunity to grow with an organization? Is it an opportunity to be in an academic medical center? I don't know. That's for you to define for yourself. And you got to remember this. You've got to go to work happy every day as best you can. And if whatever turns you on, then you should go and do that so that you're not just trudging and doing a job that you hate. It's an opportunity to really find fulfillment in life. And so, but as I said, opportunity is something you have to define for yourself. Okay. The third thing is location. You cannot define that by yourself. You have to involve your family. A couple of stories. I had one situation where a COO was moving up into a CEO job. Perfect. The client wanted him. He wanted the job. So he had been to the site with his wife, but they hadn't told the daughter that they were looking at making a move. So when he got the offer and got ready to go give the acceptance, they told the daughter, and the daughter came apart and had a psychological issue. So that whole thing fell apart. So you have to start at the very beginning, way up earlier, in letting the family know there's a possible move. It causes issues with the family. It can, depending if they're not prepared for this. Now, if you're married, I hope you're in healthcare. Healthcare is a nomadic profession. I hope you explain that to your spouse when you got married or before you got married, because generally, you want to make career moves, and they may take you to different states. They may take you to different level areas of the country. You may go from east to west. So all those things. So having a spouse that understands that and is prepared for it is really important. Now, some of you got two career families, and so what happens is generally in that situation, one spouse moves one time, and then the next time, the next spouse and the other spouse moves, and you go back and forth. It's really difficult when one spouse sacrifices their entire career for the other spouse, and then they have a falling out and divorce, and it's just a mess. So keep that in mind if you are a two career family. Generally, what's happening nowadays is that one of the spouses can be a remote employee. And that's really helped a lot of careers, because then the remote employee can, whichever spouse is a remote employee, can just pick up and move to the house that they're going to, and so forth. So anyhow, make sure that the kids are on board, that they and second thing is, it's very common if someone has kids in high school, like the junior senior year, to do a commuting marriage until that kid is out of high school. And I see that a lot, and it's more accepted by the organizations that my dentist here in Atlanta, her husband is in New York, and they go back and forth every weekend, from New York to Atlanta, Atlanta to New York. And they've been doing that for years. So it can be done. It is more difficult to do, but it can be done. So, location, you have to involve your family if you want this thing to go well. Another reason is that oftentimes you, in dealing with senior people, they're trying to get closer to relatives, either that are sick now or they think they may be sick or whatever reason. And that's another thing that you have to consider there. Remember in the location factor that the more you limit the area, the harder the job is to find a job. So in other words, if you come to me and you say, "Larry, I want to go to I've got to just go to somewhere around Dallas." Whoa. Okay, that's going to be a problem, because there are a limited number of things and people like Dallas. Same thing with Atlanta. I have that happen a lot. People come in and talk to me and they say, "I like staying in Atlanta." that's going to be hard to do because a lot of people like to come to Atlanta in spite of the traffic and the heat and the humidity. But you know, it just makes it difficult. Just 2 weeks ago, I had a candidate, physician leader, and says, "My wife and I'll go anywhere." And I said, "Wow," because that opens up a whole range of possibilities. So just please keep that in mind. Okay, here's my rule. So if only one thing, if you're looking at these things, those three, money, opportunity, locations, and only one of them is positive, pass. Okay? If you're looking at money, opportunity, location, and two of them are positive, then you got something to consider. That's okay. Okay. You may still pass at the end, but this is a good deal. If you get all three of them, take that job right now. Don't wait on it. Don't goof around. Because getting money, opportunity, and location all positive at the same time is reasonably difficult. Okay. Let's just say location is a neutral. Okay, you still got two positives there. But if you only have one positive, you just need to leave it alone and wait on something else to come along, unless you're just desperate to get a job. And it's been a long time. You've run out of severance and you just can't take it anymore. Then go ahead. But keep this in mind. You don't want to be out of work for a long time and then have a short-term employment, because that's like a kiss of death. And if you have two short-term employments, then that was tough too. And it may have been that the job that you went into was short-term and you didn't know it. You didn't think so at the time, but all of a sudden it ended up that way. And then if you have another one that's short-term, it's just difficult to explain that to a client or to the organization why, you know, you had such bad luck on all of this. All right. So one, pass. Two, yep, consider. Three, jump on it. Okay. Now, there's a fourth factor that doesn't come up in a lot of jobs, but it's out there. Let me talk about it. And that is travel. So in my career as an executive search consultant and governance consultant, I traveled. I traveled almost every week. I ended up, right now, I have 4.7 million miles with Delta. And that was after they changed the system. I had 1 million miles before that. So I travel. I know how to travel. At this point in my career, you know, it's too much. I just hate to get on a plane now. Although, you know, I'm in the Comfort Plus. I'm first on the list for upgrade to first class. And that's a nice thing. Okay. That says I'm establishing my credentials as a traveler. So first of all, if you're going to travel, are you up to it? It is a hassle nowadays. The airports are crowded. Atlanta is the busiest airport in the world. Okay. Even though I got all the stuff that gets me through the line, there's sometimes the line is long. I had one flight I had to get to, and I was 15 minutes before I got to the pre-check line. It was another 20 minutes to get. I'd been in line 35, 40 minutes before I ever got through security. So just make sure that you're willing to live with the hassles. Okay. Some of the organizations give you the Flyers Club you can go to, and that's a wonderful thing too. But you know, I quit going to that when I quit renewing my membership because in Atlanta, there were lines out the door because they had too many people inside the Sky Club. So that's one thing. Number two, first thing was, got to remember it's a hassle. So can you handle the hassle? Number two, what kind of travel is it? See, in my case, most of it was airline travel, unless I was going to Birmingham or Greenville or Savannah or something like that, in which case I'd drive. It was just easier to do that, okay? If you have a regional job where you got to go to different cities and you got to fly there, that's one thing. If you have a regional job where you're going to smaller hospitals in your region and driving there, it's an hour or 2 hours, something like that, something else, okay? just got to make sure that you're up for it and that it doesn't bother you. Do you have some, you know, do you listen to a podcast in the car? Some people say do that and they think it's great. You know, they'll drive 4 hours just listening to podcasts. Me, I couldn't do that. Oh, I listen to country music and sing along. So that's the first thing. That's the second thing. Third thing, will your spouse put up with your travel? Okay. So when my wife and I married, she was a corporate lawyer and I knew I was traveling. So we talked about it and she said she was fine with it. As it turned out, I didn't realize how fine she was with it. Because what she started doing was playing bridge online with her two girls and a mother. And so every week she would want to know when I was going to be out of town so she could set up a bridge game online with her family. And that worked out really well. And she had been, as a corporate lawyer, she'd had to fly some places. So she understood where I was. And then, you know, we talked every day. So make sure that we had that squared away. And so for her, she was an independent woman and she didn't need me to be there to do anything. I mean, I did it when I got back. And most of my travel was like day trips or, you know, one overnight or something like that. So that's easy travel. And, but on the other hand, if I had been out of town for a week or two at a time, that might have been difficult. So when she ended up the lawyer for the Olympics when they were in Atlanta, should have won. This is being recorded the week. Oh, the Paris Games start tonight. And I should have worn my Atlanta shirt. But anyhow, after the games were over, they had to shut it down. A year later, they just locked the door and were gone. So she had to find a job, had an offer from IBM to negotiate big contracts for IBM. And they told her it was 2 weeks a month. She could work out of her house, but it was 2 weeks a month. She'd be gone. We sat down and talked about it. I said, look, honey, first of all, I don't believe it's going to be 2 weeks a month. I think they'll exaggerate that. I think it's going to be more. Number two, you're going to be gone. I'm going to be gone. We're not going to see each other. So she ended up taking a corporate job here in Atlanta, and that worked out fine for us. And she passed the lead on to a friend of hers who was another lawyer. He took the job. We had dinner with him after, you know, maybe 6 months after he'd taken the job. Sure enough, he was gone three weeks out of the month. And so we dodged a bullet on that one. So this tells you this. All right, first of all, figure out how they calculate the amount of travel. Okay. Do that if it's, is it 4 days out of seven, 3 days out of five? When I was at Price Waterhouse, we had some people that traveled all the time. And then we had other people that were always on an audit in the city of Atlanta. You know, this is a different type of thing that you've got to figure out what's going on. And then once they tell you how they calculate it, verify it with somebody that's in the job or has done something similar to that. Because travel just can be a pain. And right now it's a pain. And so keep that in mind. It's just a separate entity because most of the job is a traveling job. But also, if make sure that you get, in some organizations, if they pay for the ticket, they get the frequent flyer points. And I'm telling you, the frequent flyer points, I never did that when I had my firm because I knew that the sacrifice the employees were making in order to travel, both for personally and for the family. So they got to keep all the benefits from all the hotel stays, all the flights and things like that. Make sure that you're able to keep those benefits. And I think it's every once in a while you get an employer that says, no, we keep those benefits. So, okay. So now we're down to the situation of acceptance, okay? Which also brings turndowns. And I want to talk about that just for a minute. Let's say you've gotten all the way down, you've gone through the second interview, you've gotten an offer. Now you got to either accept or turn it down. If you accept it, that's the easy thing. Turning it down requires some finesse. And let me give you some ways of turning down an offer, but keeping it open. What happens is you never know until the very end. You may have talked, sometimes you talked about it, but until you see it in writing, you got to know exactly what it is when you get it in writing. So I've seen turndowns where people did it so well, they left the door open. Okay. And next thing you know, the client has gone on to another candidate, gotten another turndown, turned around and gone back to the initial candidate. And this is how you do a turndown. You say, look, I'm going to turn this down. I have really enjoyed this process. You're a great organization, but I can't accept the offer under these circumstances. But let me tell you what I can do. If you can change this or that and do this or that, then I can accept the offer. So here's where you're putting yourself in. You're putting yourself in a situation where if they go back and do it, you really have to accept that offer. So don't say these words unless you really mean it. But it would sometimes these things turn right around. You got the right location. You just didn't have the right money. And your opportunity was pretty good. Okay. But you know, you couldn't afford to live there. They come back and you've already basically accepted it. You've given them a conditional acceptance. So please think about doing that, but don't do it unless you're prepared for them to come back with the right numbers or the right this or the right that job description. We talked about those things. So, all right. So you've accepted. You're ready to go. All right. The first 90 days is critical. They've even written books about that. Michael Watkins wrote the first 90 days. He's been updated and everything like that. It's a $17.50 investment on your part with Amazon. So I would get that and read what it has to say. Let's start off on the right foot. Don't make them move your firewood. Let's go out now with positive reputation right off the bat. Okay. So what you need to do is have the administrative assistant or whoever you're working with start putting together your meet and greets for that first 90 days. If you're in a public sector, like in a public hospital or something, I mean, meeting externally is going to be really important. But if you're in a 501c3 private hospital, still got to meet with everybody. And you ought to go on and get those. Don't wait till you get there to put this schedule together. Get the schedule done now. Usually it's 60, 90 days before you report. Anyhow, you can get a lot of work done in 60 to 90 days. And generally what happens is you'll have an administrative assistant, and the administrative assistant can set those appointments for you, do the background, get the bio sketch of the person you're going to be meeting, talk about whatever the agendas are. If you've got a chance to find out more about the person you're meeting, you may be able to bring them some token, a company's t-shirt, sweatshirt, their favorite bottle of gin. Whatever you got, it's nice to come in with something that sort of starts you off on a positive foot. So generally the secretaries talking to each other can, whoever you're going to meet, your secretary can say, what's his interest? I don't know. Sometimes it may be a meeting in their office. Sometimes it might be a meeting in your office, but I would want to go to their offices, even though it's going to take more time. Sometimes it might be a meet and greet over Zoom or teams, and I'd rather see them face to face. And usually these things take 45 minutes to an hour, and you get a lot done by then. And in that first 90 days, be prepared for surprises. Somebody failed to tell you this. Somebody didn't want to tell you something negative because they were recruiting you hard. So don't let surprises really hit you too hard. There are going to be surprises, and there's just no way around it. You're going to say, oh man, how did I miss this? Well, it's just you can't know everything. As I told you, you can't know everything that's going on until you're sitting in the seat of the chair that you took at your office. I mean, it just comes up. And so just be prepared for that. Okay. The other thing to remember is rounding. Sometimes people forget to do that. They're so busy. Make your assistant put a time on your calendar so you can round the departments and go see everybody you need to see. And that's, and if you've got the pharmacy department, okay, fine. Go see who's in radiology. Go see them. Go to the places all around so people know who you are. And I had an interesting story, you know, being in healthcare. My daughter was had an emergency operation. It was fine, everything like that. And so I, being the person I am, I called up the administrative hospital and said, look, my daughter's in the hospital. You send somebody down to take look, make sure she's okay. And my daughter had said, don't come over here. You know, I'm fine. You know, they did an emergency operation, everything's good. So she was in the recovery room, and the chief operating officer shows up. And he asked her, is everything okay? Well, fine. You know, my dad just, he probably overreacted, you know, but no, I'm doing fine. Everything's fine. Everybody's good. So he leaves. And then the nurse runs in. She says, oh my gosh, is anything wrong? Can I help you? What's wrong? And she says, no, nothing's wrong. She says, well, the COO is in here. We never see him. Hey, start off, do your rounding so that everybody knows who you are. Okay, this is our last session in this series. Until a month from now, after we were releasing them as a unit, so that people don't have to wait 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, they can just keep going with this. But the next one is going to be a month after we release this series. And the reason we're doing that is that because there's probably going to be questions, and a podcast is hard to answer questions. I virtually can't do it. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a potpourri at the end, and it's going to be stuff that where you've sent me questions and I'll answer those as best I can, and stuff that I thought after the fact, oh Lord, Larry, you know, why didn't you say something about that? So it's going to be a mixture of things. It's going to be a podcast with stuff. I've got the basics, don't get me wrong, but it's going to be some other stuff that's probably going to be interesting to you. So here's what you do. Send me an email at james.larry.tyler@gmail.com. That's james.larry.tyler@gmail.com. And on that podcast, I'll answer your question as best I can. And, you know, if I need more information, I'll send you an email back and say, okay, explain this to me. And if worse comes to worse, we'll do a call and check it out. Because if you're experiencing the issue, it may be somebody else who's experienced the same thing. Okay. So listen, it's just been great doing this for you. And I appreciate the opportunity presented me by the local chapter to put this together for you. One other thing, and this is real important, real important. I always make this statement at the end of anything I do with regard to career development. Listen carefully. Find a job that's fun. You'll never have to work the rest of your life. Thank you very much.